Welcome to SILRAP Podcasts. You are about to listen to a service of the Center for International Law Research and Policy.
First of all, thanks so much to Carsten and Morten for inviting me to this conference. I will talk to the PE and to the situation in Iraq relating to the UK. The title of this paper is Accountability for British War Crimes in Iraq, examining the nexus between international and national justice responses. So the key focus here is really complementarity, a positive complementarity. How does it play out? But I think beyond that, this particular situation is interesting for a number of reasons. One is that it's the first PE to be reopened. Another, of course, that it relates to a major power that's also a state party to the ICC. So in that sense, that combination would be the first of its kind. Interesting also, I think, due to the range of judicial processes that we see in the UK. So I think we've already spoken to some of them today, including IHAT, but there are others, and I know that Rachel will touch on the details of that, so I'll try not to dig too much into the details of these domestic processes, other than when I feel it relates specifically to complementarity. And then also a very mixed government response, I think. So on the one hand, you got the UK government saying, you know, we will cooperate with the OTP, and they're in fact doing so, and at the same time making it very clear that they want this preliminary examination to end and as soon as possible. And then combined with what seems to materialize as an attack on the lawyers that have been involved in different legal processes relating to the abuses in, or the alleged abuses in Iraq, most recently leading to the closing down of public interest lawyers. And on the other hand, Lee Day, so another law firm that has been involved at least in the domestic processes, was cleared the other day by the solicitor's disciplinary tribunal. So the focus of this research project is really to sort of test some of the assumptions that are being made about positive complementarity and PEs and in the literature, and at the same time look at how the politics or how ICC state relations play out, and how what does it matter that we are in this case dealing with a major power. So one point that I want to make before moving on to discussing this particular PE is that there seems to be a very strong, and I sometimes feel even largely uncontested, belief in the literature that that positive complementarity simply works. So, and I think that belief is shared both by academics and at least if you look at public statements made by prosecutors. So here I put one of the more famous statements by Moreno Ocampo back from 2003. But that belief also plays out specifically with respect to the PA states. So I got a quote here by Bjørgen and Gerbertus, who says that commentators generally believe the anticipated reaction from a state on the PA is to aggressively and fairly pursue domestic prosecutions of international crimes, so not to trigger the jurisdiction of the ICC. And I think that really reflects what most studies have been sort of implying about this particular connection between PE and positive complementarity. And Bensouda herself, of course, has also made quite a number of statements to that effect, sort of implying that that the PA states can be looked at as one of the most important tools of the court in terms of advancing positive complementarity. And all that being said, there seems to be very few studies that actually empirically test how does positive complementarity play out in particular situation, what interactions are there with with the PE and different actions taken by the OTP at the stage. And noteworthy also, I think, that no PE to date has been terminated, that has been closed with specifically with reference to existing domestic proceedings. So of course that's a fact, a very basic fact that seems to be quite frequently overlooked in a lot of the literature on this topic. At the same time, there seems to be a lack of conceptual clarity. What are we actually speaking about when we're speaking positive complementarity? And of course, views have sort of changed over the years, but depending on which prosecutor was in office. So basically, Moreno Ocampo, at least at some point, took the view that positive complementarity is basically what all the others are doing. So what other state parties are doing, what NGOs might be doing in terms of capacity building and so forth. Also a very broad interpretation of the ASP Bureau back in 2010, so everything related to strengthening national jurisdictions. Whereas the current view by Bensouda and what is set forth in the PE policy paper seems to be somewhat more narrow, that we are speaking about some form of cooperation and consultation between the ICC, the OTP in particular, and national authorities working on accountability. Yet it seems a very key distinction when we speak about complementarity. A positive complementarity is quite often overlooked, I think. So that could be, or there is, I think, a fundamental difference between what I refer to as the burden sharing and the handover version of complementarity. So burden sharing, where the ICC would go after typically the biggest fish, and then domestic authorities are thought to go after lower level perpetrators, whereas the handover version of complementarity then refers to a situation where a PE leads national authorities to completely take over and then the PE can be closed. So of course this is what is most relevant for the purpose of this paper. Also, there seems to be a gap in the literature on state ICC relations, whereas we have quite a significant literature on state ICC relations in general, and in particular involving powerful states, so the US and other permanent members of the Security Council. Then there's a less clear understanding, I think, of how do these relations actually play out at the PE stage, and also the role of other actors in this regard, including civil society and lawyers groups. So to turn to a brief overview of this particular PE, then as has been noted several times today already, it was reopened in May 2014, and it was done so specifically on the basis of submissions made by PIL and the European Centre. So that was referenced specifically by the OTP. This PE is now in the so-called phase two, so looking at jurisdiction, the substance matter jurisdiction, but nonetheless, the OTP is also, to some extent at least, involved in an assessment of domestic accountability processes, and that is clear from the most recent PE reports. So the OTP is involved in quite a range of activities at this stage. Significant consultation with government bodies, including IHAT, and also, of course, significant consultation with the communication Article 15 centre, so public interest lawyers in the European Centre. The type of crimes that are under scrutiny here basically involve two categories. So one is unlawful killings, many of them in combat situations, and the other category relates to abuses of detainees, so two quite distinct categories in a sense, and I will return more to this later on in the presentation, what that might mean for how this PE could progress. Of course, there's also the question of the extent to which these crimes were systematic, and some comments were made on that in the submissions by public interest lawyers and the European Centre. And also an argument is that to the extent a large proportion of the current allegations relating to abuse of detainees are would prove correct, then that would be a strong indication, I suppose, that this is something that goes higher up in the chain of command. Quite simply, it's hard to imagine that such abuses could have taken place in many different detention centres without there being at least some kind of approval from higher up in the command. And it should be added, the military lawyers have, at the time during the Iraq War, also communicated to their superiors that some of the so-called five techniques were being deployed in Iraq. Just a brief word also on the link to the debate about the legality of the Iraq War. So there's been some reporting on this in UK media, and much of it has been sort of confusing questions relating to the legality of the war itself with the issue of war crimes. And to that effect, I think it was last summer, Bensouda came up with a statement relating to one specific newspaper article where she said, you know, we simply don't have jurisdiction over questions of legality in the Iraq War. So all these questions about whether or not Tony Blair can be prosecuted for that at the ICC are, of course, miscalculated. So now we'll turn to a discussion of the different strategies and responses adopted by different actors involved in the situation. And looking first at the OTP, it seems clear that the understanding within the office is that the best case scenario here would be for positive complementarity to work. So for the UK to go ahead with a genuine accountability process, which also targets those higher up in the command that might be responsible for these alleged crimes. And of course, in particular, to the extent that it could sort of be proven that the UK doing so is a consequence of the PE, then that could be portrayed as a major victory, of course. Concerning the perception of domestic accountability processes in place, it seems to me that the understanding is that IHAT, that the OTP has looked particularly at IHAT as opposed to other domestic processes, and one key issue in that regard has been whether IHAT is looking at systemic issues, so whether they are only looking at case by case, looking at these allegations case by case, or whether they're also looking at what is the systemic nature of this, if anything, and that might have been a concern. Questions relating to timing, of course, also should the OTP simply wait this out? Should we wait for prosecutions to effectively occur in the UK, or can an assessment be made early on that some processes are in place that seem genuine, and hence the PE can be closed on that basis? I think I'm running. How much time do I have left, Carsten?
3 minutes.
Okay, so let me move to responses and strategies of the government. So basically, the government is saying, you know what, we're cooperating with the ICC, and at the same time, they're sending a clear message to the OTP, and they're doing so quite publicly, that that the ICC does not have jurisdiction, so they cannot move ahead because these crimes were not committed on a large scale, so the gravity requirement quite simply is not satisfied. Secondly, they're arguing with reference to complementarity that domestic accountability processes are in place, so on that basis it should be closed also. And thirdly, this strategy that I alluded to before about going after the messengers, so speaking in quite harsh terms about the lawyers involved in these processes, calling them ambulance chasers and so forth. So I added a number of quotations up here. And then finally, the civil society and lawyers groups involved in this process, it seems clear that the strategy has been to, you know, to pursue this on the basis that positive complementarity would work. That perception, at least according to the lawyers I've recently spoken to, seem to perhaps somewhat change, that maybe, especially following the closure of IHAT, that perhaps it's actually better for the ICC to move ahead now. So that would be interesting to see what that might mean, if anything, for the process. It also seems clear that the scope of the submissions was significantly influenced by the closure of the first piece, so back in 2006, when Moreno Ocampo basically said that gravity was not satisfied, so hence this strategy of submitting a large amount of allegations, though that might also backfire. At least one of the criticisms raised against IHAT was exactly that, you know, these allegations are building up and building up, it's simply too many, so there might have been unforeseen circumstances in that regard. Just a few comments on IHAT in addition to what I already said. So one important observation is that IHAT was established not as a consequence of the ICC, but in response to the rulings of UK courts and in response to rulings of the European Court of Human Rights. So no connection at all to begin with, but that connection has then later been made with several government officials stating that, you know, we need to keep IHAT to keep the ICC away. And of course, that mission of IHAT could sort of have been added later. There's nothing necessarily not logical in that. But if we look at the specific statements made in connection to IHAT's closure, so what was being said before the Defense Subcommittee, then it's clear that basically the Attorney General was saying, well, it seems unlikely, but, you know, let's keep IHAT in case that the ICC might move ahead, whereas the Defense Subcommittee itself concluded that, you know, it's very unlikely that the ICC will move ahead, so that shouldn't be a relevant concern in closing down IHAT. So to conclude, this is a situation where we can clearly not say that the ICC has simply triggered genuine national proceedings. If anything, then the ICC process might have kept IHAT alive for longer than what it would otherwise have been, and possibly also influenced its operations in a positive manner from a rule of law perspective. But at the end, it seems to have been sort of a cost-benefit analysis taking place in the Defense Subcommittee, with all this criticism being raised against IHAT that, you know, the way they were approaching service personnel and so forth was being really criticized by the committee, and then a calculation that, yes, we can close it down, and that seems unlikely to change what is going on within the OTP. So not the most optimistic account of how a PE could trigger positive complementarity. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. For more open access audio recordings, films, and publications, go to silrap.org.